Welcome to the next edition of Business Law Focus. Great having you with us. Pleasure to welcome Jocelyn Katz, who's an executive at E&S and Head in the competition antitrust practice. And we want to look at a significant milestone in SA law this year, which is the 25th anniversary of our competition law framework in South Africa. We wanted to look at some of the highs, some of the lows and difficulties and what lies next. Jocelyn, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much. Lovely to be here.
So let's start with anti-avoidance in competition law. That's a big theme. It's a big focus. It's in the lens of the regulators, the business community. What are the recent developments there that we need to look at? And obviously, we, you know, if you look at the news, there is an element of, you know, the government stepping in with inquiries, et cetera, in this space, but obviously framed within the need for anti-avoidance and ultimately better competition in South Africa, which should be good for the economy.
Thanks, Evan. Yes, so, I mean, competition law is a very, you know, well-trodden path internationally and certainly locally as well, in the sense that markets are regulated, entry into markets are regulated in some way, mergers and acquisitions are regulated, and the framework is now 25 years old, and we all sort of know and understand it well. But we have seen some changes, particularly in relation to the public interest tests in merger control, that, you know, we are seeing firms electing potentially to carve South Africa out of their deals or potentially not to engage in deals because of the very high burden that some of these new obligations place on merging parties in circumstances where, you know, while it could be a law of general application, in the context of merger control, it is not. And maybe I can just give you a little example there.
Sure.
You will have seen recently in the attempted acquisition by BHP of Anglo. Anglo stated publicly that the public interest requirements in merger control created such great uncertainty, and that was, you know, sort of the reason that the board elected not to accept the offer. Now, I'm not sure I would agree with the sort of uncertainty point. I think, you know, what is required is clear, but I think what is required is a lot. I think the burden is significant, and I think we are seeing those kinds of issues come to the fore where the significance of the commitments required can render a deal non-viable commercially. So you have these sort of very ambitious, you know, objectives of the competition authorities to try and address historical issues through mechanisms like merger control. And at the same time, you then have, you know, merging parties who have to weigh up the commercial viability of doing these deals.
Are there any case studies? Obviously, we're looking at 25 years, right, as a milestone. Any case studies that jump out to you on the mergers and acquisition space specifically that have kind of shaped our market?
Sure. So unlike most jurisdictions, South Africa has had this public interest test in its law since inception. There are, you know, various criteria for the assessment of the impact of the transaction on the public interest broadly, and the jurisprudence developed with a focus on jobs, job losses arising out of mergers. And in the beginning, you know, there was sort of a fairly light analysis done. It developed and evolved over time. And there was the Massmart Walmart acquisition, the acquisition by Massmart, by Walmart of Massmart, as well as the merger between Momentum and Metropolitan. And those two transactions sort of changed the face of the assessment of how retrenchments were considered in the context of mergers. And a methodology developed in those cases where you merging parties are required to really assess and justify the any retrenchments that arise out of the mergers. And I think that settled over time. And, you know, while globally parties were still seeking efficiencies as a result of reduced headcount and things like that. That became a bit of a dirty word in South Africa, and we certainly don't consider retrenchments arising out of mergers as a sought-after efficiency.
Yep.
And that became the norm. And merging parties started pricing that in a sense, into their assessment. So I would say those two changed the face of the public interest assessment. More recently, you may have read about the private equity acquisition of Burger King in the last couple of years. And that was really the next milestone that changed the face of the public interest assessment, because it really considered the new ground introduced in the 2019 amendment to the Act. And that is that the authorities must consider the impact of the transaction on the promotion of a greater spread of ownership by BEE or HDP firms in the merged entity, or by workers in the merged entity. And that really is, you know, the primary focus of the authorities in merger activity at the moment, and has absolutely shaped the current merger landscape.
Yeah, I mean, is the current framework promoting enough market entry? I know it's meant to also foster innovation. Of course, preventing monopolies is a key aspect of this. Is that happening?
So in some ways, yes. I think, you know, the Commission has always been solid in identifying the competition issues arising in a merger. And we have, over the years, had, you know, sort of significant prohibitions where the authorities were seeking to prevent monopolies from being formed. And I think on the competition side, that has been successful. I think what has also been successful is, you know, the competition rules are there to regulate the playing field, to level the playing fields. So where there are concentrated markets with dominant players, they are bound by a set of rules that allow and promote entry by smaller players. And the same amendment that I mentioned a moment ago, the 2019 amendment, introduced various other, shall we say, additional rules that relate to dominant firms, particularly aimed at increasing and growing entry by smaller firms and HDP-owned firms. So the Commission and the competition authorities generally have had significant successes historically in sort of, shall we say, sanctioning the historical statutory monopolies. So, you know, SOEs or previous SOEs, the likes of SAA, Telkom, Sasol, AMSA, all, you know, historical SOEs that were, in a sense, statutory monopolies, have all in some way been dealt with and forced to change behavior through the fines and through the competition regulation. So certainly I think the competition framework has been successful in preventing monopolies from a mergers perspective, but also in enforcing the rules around, you know, what dominant players can and can't do.
We are seeing a lot more market inquiries across various sectors. Are these actually effective and you know, or are they posing risks?
So, Evan, thanks. I mean, the market inquiries are a helpful tool to understand market dynamics and how markets work. They've also seen a change structurally in terms of, you know, the nature of market inquiries. It was very much a voluntary process in the early days. The Amendment Act brought about some additional structure to how market inquiries work. And so there's some changes around the powers attributable to the authorities. But I think the difficulty is that it shouldn't be used as a replacement for proper enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So market inquiries give the authorities an ability to make recommendations about conduct where, you know, there isn't actually a finding of the substantive test, which is a substantial lessening or prevention of competition.
Yeah.
So while it's a good tool to signal the market about the conduct that the authorities consider good or bad, and that should really lead parties to a self-assessment, right?
Mm.
Is what I'm doing meeting the tests under the Competition Act? And we do a lot of that work. We, you know, our clients bring us a lot of stuff that the commission and the authorities never see. We do that assessment together with our clients. Is their conduct meeting the tests in the Competition Act? And so I think that's useful. But market inquiries are incredibly expensive to run. They run for years. They take an enormous amount of resources from the commission, from private sector. And the outcomes have been a mixed bag of effectiveness. Mm. There's been, some recommendations made, some parties have pushed back, but it doesn't really and shouldn't take the place of enforcement under the Act.
Great. No, that's really great insight into it and an area to watch, certainly, going forward. I was recently at the Leader X Summit and I was sitting in some of the Labour talks, but AI is coming through strongly. It's affecting the working world significantly. Companies and executives and leaders are having to step up and prepare. What's the impact of AI on competition law and market regulation?
Evan, this is something to me that is fascinating, and I think something that we are going to have to keep a very close eye on. Let me say this, AI is incredibly sophisticated. So to counter AI from a legal tool bag perspective is a difficult thing, yeah, right? Yeah. I think where we are at the moment is the ordinary rules should apply. In other words, there are contraventions set out in the Competition Act, and those contraventions should stand unless there are legislative amendments. So you can't read in, additional contraventions where they may not exist. So where AI or an algorithm is used to fix prices or price discriminate, which can happen. I mean, I don't know the extent to which technically we are there yet, but there's been all of this talk around the airlines, for example, where the algorithm essentially ends up fixing prices if you are trying to book prices online between different websites and things. So there is a possibility that these kinds of things can happen, and if that should happen, then of course competition law should intervene. But I don't think that there should be an overreach in terms of creating new kinds of contraventions as yet. I don't think we're there yet. But I think this is incredibly difficult to police. This is sophisticated technology. It requires sophisticated analysis. Just by way of anecdote, the CMA, the Common Markets Authority in the UK, employs 100 data analysts for their digital markets analysis. Now, they have an act that they are policing, but once again, this is not low-hanging fruit for the competition authorities, although digital markets and AI and all that sort of tech space is very much on our commission's radar.
Yeah, and I'm sure going forward we'll have to watch very closely digital market regulation, data privacy and how that is applied, and the role of technology generally. So I think that's fabulous, a lot to watch. And then just in conclusion, if I could ask you just a vote on or your assessment of 25 years, right, competition framework in South Africa, significant milestone being reached. The Competition Commission, the Tribunal and the Appeal Court, have they played a powerful and solid role in ensuring fairness and transparency in South Africa's market?
I have to say with no small measure of pride that I think the South African competition authorities have been one of the most effective regulators we have had in the country. They are extremely highly regarded internationally, as part of the founders of the ICN, the International Competition Network. They have played a pioneering role in this public interest assessment that I've mentioned a number of times. Most of the past 25 years, they've stood alone in this public interest assessment. And it is only in the last few years that the rest of the world is starting to consider sort of broader consumer welfare aspects of competition law and turning to the South African authorities for guidance on this. Do they always get it right? No. But they have played this pioneering role. On the transparency, our authorities have always been exceptional, particularly the Competition Tribunal and the Competition Appeal Court have always issued detailed reasons for their decisions. It gives immense insight to, you know, emerging parties, to business, to practitioners, into the thinking and understanding of the reasoning of why decisions are reached. Once again, we don't always agree, and sometimes, you know, we think they may get it wrong, but at least there is great transparency. The Commission unfortunately doesn't publish reasons, but, you know, that is not necessarily their role. But certainly the Tribunal and the Appeal Court have made a huge contribution to jurisprudence and understanding of the regulatory framework. So yes, I think they have been pivotal. I think we are now at a point where 25 years on, we have a really good grounding, but we're all waiting with some bated breath to see what lies ahead with our new minister, recently appointed to the Ministry of Trade, Industry and Competition. Yep. And we'll see where to from here.
Well, Jocelyn, thanks very much for walking us so insightfully through the past 25 years and also giving us a look into the future. Been great chatting to you. Thanks very much.
Evan, thank you so much, and thanks to all listeners.